Gummer Jobber, Rustavelli Avenue. This is TheBealPod.com coming to you from our studios high atop Prospero's Books and Cafe. Today is Thursday, the 14th of June, 2012. On this date, in 1789, whiskey is first distilled from corn by the Reverend Elijah Craig in Bourbon County, Kentucky. Hallelujah. In 1912, Yakov Gogobashvili, Georgian educational guru and children's writer, died. He introduced Deda Anna, or Mother Tongue, a book to learn the alphabet for kids, made it possible for peasant children to learn to read and write, still used today. I highly recommend it if you don't have a copy. 10 years later, in 1922, Warren Harding became the first U.S. president to be heard on a radio broadcast. And in 1937, soon after the DuPont Corporation invented nylon and therefore were excited about getting rid of hemp rope, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Marijuana Tax Act. And exactly 10 years later, in what authorities claim is a complete coincidence, in 1947 a UFO crashed in Roswell, New Mexico. In 1953, a knuckle-gnawingly hot Georgian actress, Nato Vajnadze, died. A year later, in 1954, U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower signs a bill into law that places the words "under God" into the U.S. Pledge of Allegiance. It was not obviously formerly there. And 30 years ago today, in 1982, the Falkland War ends. Kevin Roach, the very cool Irish-born American architect, is 90 years old today. We are Cameron Christensen, Matthias Hooter, and me, Mark Mullen. Nothing we say represents any organizations we are affiliated with in any way. So, Ivanishvili has been given an unprecedentedly high fine of $91 million U.S. dollars. The amount is equal to just over 2% of Georgia's total national budget revenues for this year. He says he won't pay, and his lawyers are already appealing to the decision in the city court. He has some other smaller fines as well earlier this week. According to netgazeti.ge, Bidzina has already paid fines that are approximately what he was previously donating to charity.
Right.
What exactly are these fines for?
So it's not always very easy to explain and not always clear, but basically the courts and the Chamber of Control are alleging that a lot of the companies are in fact his, and that he has misappropriated funding and kind of for his campaign, although, you know, this is funding that is not really coming from him. So it is companies that, for example, renovated and rented office space and then subleased this office space to the Georgian Dream. It's Global TV, which is a company that is owned by his brother and some other shareholders.
The satellites, the satellite issue as well.
Yeah. So these are companies where Ivanishvili is not the official owner or not an official representative. But kind of in some of the sense it, we attend, or my colleagues went to some of the court trials regarding these fines. This week, and basically, you know, in court, the Chamber of Control says, well, you know, we don't really have any clear evidence that this is really Ivanishvili, but everybody knows it's him. And that's
and they say that in court.
More or less, yeah. And so that's a very tricky.
Has there been a court case where, for example, the government is using administrative resources and is fined umpteen gazillion dollars, and the judge, you know, the prosecution alleges that it's the government, and the judge said, yeah, everybody knows it's the government that's doing this. Yeah. You know, it's just we don't really exactly have the paperwork.
No,
what international observers say after the fact.
Yeah,
okay.
And these court hearings, you know, there are a bunch of problems with them because, for example, Ivanishvili's lawyers, you know, they get a 400-page, you know, piece of evidence from the Chamber of Control. They, you know, they give them 400 pages at, you know, yesterday evening, for example, in one case about Global TV that was negotiated today. So, you know, they get that at 7 in the evening. Here's 400 pages of evidence we have against you. By the way, the trial is tomorrow, you know, at 9, so be ready at 9.
Right.
And so they don't have enough time to, you know, prepare their defense, to look at all the evidence. There's these court hearings, you know, last usually only for a few hours. And the court usually refuses to hear any, you know, witnesses. So the Chamber of Control has, you know, they say, we talk to people, here's the written evidence, but there's, you know, never anybody heard in court to, you know, by any sides to support these claims. So there's a bunch of problems.
I have a couple points of clarification, too. Is it Bidzina personally, or is it the Georgian Dream? And also, if... can the Georgian government actually have access to this money? I mean, is it possible for them to attach, you know, to access these funds if he refuses to pay?
So they can freeze accounts and confiscate money in that way. The fines are usually against Bidzina.
Personally.
Yes, because he's, I think...
because that's where the money is.
Yeah, because he is found as being the person who is behind this, you know, whatever company they're going after. But it's a bit difficult because the lawyers are the same. I mean, his representatives represent the company and himself often.
Huh.
Some of the companies.
Yeah, I mean, I have mixed feelings about this because, on the one hand, I think that the fact that he has several billion is a real problem, and the government is terrified of that. And I mean, what that does to politics in the country, what I think, you know, call me crazy or biased or mean, but I mean, I think a lot of the people around him, don't know if it's a majority or not, but a lot of the people around them are in it for the cash. And I just think that it really messes up the politics of this country, the fact that he's so rich. On the other hand, I don't know, considering the situation when he said, okay, I'm entering politics, I don't know whether it would have been possible for anyone other than a billionaire to, you know, come in the way he's come in and
right.
bring the opposition to together, even if it was someone with a sort of political strength and, you know, of someone like Misha Saakashvili.
Right, but it's his funding that keeps the coalition together.
It's his funding that keeps the coalition together, which I think drives the government and ruling party crazy. On the other hand, I mean, let's be real. The state has been using corporate money in one way or another quite effectively. I mean, if through the media, if nothing else, and in many other ways, for quite a while. And there's absolutely no check on that.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, you know, I'm not sure where this this goes. I mean, in some ways he's sort of doing the same thing. It's just in a way he's got deeper pockets.
Right. And I mean, Global TV, you know, you can say, yes, it's owned by his brother. But then there's a bunch of media companies and other companies that are owned by, you know, close relatives of high public officials, of MPs and so on.
Right.
So you would have to go after all these companies, you know, if they do anything that is remotely supportive of, you know, the ruling party's agenda.
Right. Last Sunday, Georgian Dream, or Otsneba, held another rally, this time in Kutaisi. Estimates vary on how many people were there. Organizers say 20,000. Some media outlets said it was even more than that. During the campaign in Kutaisi, Bidzina said that restoring trade with Russia would not be a problem. Perhaps most importantly, he named the Imedet the majoritarian candidates. Gubaz Sanakidze will run in Kutaisi. Former captain of the Georgian football team, Kahi Kaladze, will run in Samtredia. Lawyer Archil Kbilashvili will run in Baghdati. Actor Gogi Kavtaradze will run in Zestaponi. Journalist Eliso Chapidze will run in Tribuli. Nodar Ebanowidze will run in Kharagouli. He has not confirmed yet whether his wife, Ekaterina Khvedelidze, plans to participate in the elections as a majoritarian candidate from Sachkhere district, as is rumored. Next campaign rally of the Georgian Dream will be in Ozurgeti in Guria in western Georgia.
And I think what is interesting is that in these elections, the majoritarians will really matter, because you need to win the majoritarian districts in order to really get, you know, a strong position in the parliament. You need to be the strongest in a lot of these districts.
But for those of you who have not are not serial listeners, can I say what my great worry is? That the elections are going to be judged by the people of Georgia in one way. How many people voted for the ruling party and how many people voted against the ruling party? And how many seats did the ruling party get, and how many seats did somebody other than the ruling party get? The variance in those ratios will be how fair people think the elections are. Not, you know, what the international observers say, which will be nothing, as always. Not how many, you know, videos of, you know, people yelling at each other are uploaded. But that is what will matter. And the problem with this election code is that half of the seats are majoritarian because of the 30% barrier, which means whoever gets, if you get the most votes and only 30% rather than what it used to be, which was 50% in the presidential election, as it is, for example, in the French presidential election, and I think is a much superior way to do it, because of that, and because you don't have to be represent a party to run as a majoritarian, it's very easy to split all the votes. And I think the most likely scenario is that the government, the ruling party, gets all but two of the majoritarian members of parliament, which means right off the bat they've got, you know, 46% of the seats in parliament, and then the rest of the seats are then divvied up among the proportional votes, which will give them automatically a constitutional majority. Now, maybe they'll get a constitutional majority, or maybe they'll get close to that, and I think it's, you know, quite possible and perhaps even likely that they will get more than half the votes in the entire country. But they're unlikely to get, you know, 75% of the vote, and they're very likely to get over 75% of the seats, which is quite problematic. And so what could happen is, you know, that could be the results of the elections that are announced. And everybody's annoyed about that, since at least this feeling I have sometimes is that I'm the only one who's ever done the math. And the international community is like, oh, wait a minute, what just happened? You know, what are we supposed to do about that now? Because it's all according to the law that exists right now.
Right. But so now, for the first time, I think if they have some strong candidates in the district, so some strong majoritarian candidates, this might actually be a campaign on the local level where the ruling party majoritarian campaigns against, you know, somebody who's actually a personality, somebody who's known, you know, I mean, even if it's just a football player or...
Well, how strong do we think these candidates are? I mean, you know...
I mean, in politics? I don't know.
I mean, Gubaz is sort of well-known. I have no idea how they feel about him in Kutaisi. You know, Kaladze, I don't know.
I mean, Chapitza is, you know, she has been a respected journalist. Relatively respected.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. But that's an important question. I mean, on the other hand, if you look at the people that have run for the, you know, that have been in parliament for the government, the majoritarians this time around, you know, they're essentially, for the most part, business people whose parents or grandparents happen to come to or whoever else, who happen to come from that Ryan. They certainly haven't spent a lot of time in the Ryan, and they've not spent a lot of time in parliament itself, you know, so... Hmm. I don't know. We'll have to see. But that would be interesting. I mean, if it is a local, a real Ryan by Ryan, district by district race. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Well, I don't know if this is overstepping the bounds of what we should be advising. But if I were a strategic voter, what you would do is vote for the non-UNM majoritarian candidate and then vote for the UNM for the party list.
Why would you do that?
Because then you can, as long as you get enough people doing that, then you can have majoritarian seats filled by non-UNM people, and then
depends on how you feel about the non-UNM person. I mean, it's an individual judgment for the majoritarian. I mean, you want the best majoritarians, and it's important to see who the people that will be picked are, both on the list and in the majoritarian races. I mean, frankly, I've been pretty underwhelmed by the overwhelming majority of government members of parliament, the majoritarians. They don't show up. They cheat in the voting. They just, you know, they've really done a bad job. Let's be real. By the same token, I'm not really sure about
the opposition guys in parliament are also not
brilliant people. You know, so the list is going to be quite important, and it's a little, you know, depressing to see the competition for, you know, who's on the list. I was in a meeting, for example, with Misha Tavkhelidze today, you know, in the European meeting, which, like, he, you know, hijacked and asked 47 questions and annoyed the heck out of everybody. And, I mean, there's a lot of people that are sort of trying to jockey their way and to make themselves in the top 75.
Would also have been interesting to see some kind of primaries or even party internal, you know, competition for these seats. And we have never seen that, I think, in Georgia, that there's actually some way of, you know, for example, supporters to vote who's going to be on that list.
But then the leadership wouldn't be able to decide who's going to be on the list. What are you talking
about?
Right. I don't understand what you
mean. I guess I didn't understand the
idea. Of course, years ago, you used to see, there were always these cases about, you know, someone's been bribing to get higher up on the party list. I mean, yeah, I've heard about that
more. Bribing, it's supporting the campaign. I mean, hey, look, American politics doesn't work that way. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, here's your number, dude.
Well, Romney's a pretty poor guy.
I mean, it's like, well, no, but it's not just that. I mean, if you're a sitting member of Congress, I mean, it's like, you know, you need a, here's what you need to contribute to the kitty if we're going to support your campaign, you know, and I mean, it's, you've got a safe seat and therefore this, and, you know, you happen to be on a coast, and I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to have American politics be the standard by which any other legislative race is judged, but it's easier for Georgia to do this better than it's doing, whereas the American system is so sort of constitutionally ossified, and, you know, now that it's, America is run by 5 Supreme Court justices, it's a little more complicated. But I digress. The parliament initiated an amendment to the law according to which the territory of Lazica, which is in Kolkheti National Park, will lose its status as a state reserve territory, by which it holds, by the way, by treaty. The state will then be able to build whatever it wants there. The best quotes are from the well-known goofball from Khoni, a town I dearly love, by the way, Akaki Bobakhidze, head of the parliament's environmental committee. He said of Europe, and I quote, "If they decide that we have violated anything, then they will just expel us, and that will be it. If we face any sanctions, then it will only be one time only." End quote.
Wait, now, what are they going to be expelled from?
Yeah, but,
from
first of all, what, yeah, okay, well, from what?
Where's it going to start, then?
I don't know. You know, it's sort of, I don't know. I mean, and this guy's the head of the Environment Committee, which really just illustrates the contempt with which, you know, the ruling party feels about environmental issues. You know, the ministry,
Himself has made multiple...
Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just really not... I mean, if you really care about environmental issues, you know, who is it in the you know, the ruling party or the government that has anything useful or interesting to say about this and just doesn't, you know, cave whenever he, and usually it's a he, is told to? The person that cares most about all this, I think, is actually Vera Kobalia, who is the one who insisted that sustainability be put in, or sustainable development be put in the name of the ministry. I don't know what kind of influence she has over these matters, but, you know, and of course, if she ever, you know, criticizes, you know, Wingnut Akaki Bobakhidze for any comments like this, you know, the retaliation would be swift and brutal. But still, you know, for anyone who's listening, you know, let's, I hope that the government will get the, not the A team, but at least someone from the B or C team there. The head of Russia's Federal Migration Service, Konstantin Romodanovsky, said that there were over 9,000 Georgian citizens staying in Russia illegally, and added, quote, "We will be finding these people, and either the Migration Service or court will be taking decisions about them," end quote. Romodanovsky's remarks came on the day when the Strasbourg court held a hearing into Georgia's complaints against Russia over deportations of ethnic Georgians from Russia more than 5 years ago.
You know, no one likes that statement, but I think that I was very interested in seeing if there was any sort of policy about illegal immigrants into Russia in general, and obviously the timing of this, the Strasbourg case was not necessarily about illegal immigrants. Those were about, you know, legitimate Georgians who were living there and then were targeted after the August 2008 conflict. So, I mean...
And they clearly were. I mean, it's obvious. Everybody knows that. I don't know what the Strasbourg court is going to say about that, but clearly the government of Russia, you know, just targeted ethnic Russians, went into schools. I mean... It was ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, how are you supposed to deal with these people? I mean, I'm sorry, but, like, you know, when you have a really senior employee of the state doing that, I mean, this is obviously something that was coordinated at the very highest level, that on this day this statement would be made.
I mean, those
particularly Europeans that encouraged Georgia to have a more normal and reasonable posture towards the Kremlin, I mean, when they're doing stuff like this...
But why? See, the thing is, for me, is why is the emphasis not on the fact that he's talking about illegal migrants? He didn't say there are, you know, this many Georgians who are living here and we're going to go after all of them.
Oh, but that's so cynical. It's so obvious that, like, what he's saying, you know, it's like, look, they want to look through the paperwork till they find a problem, they'll find a problem. I mean, anyone who's ever dealt with any immigration issues, you know, of their own. Look, if you want to find somebody that's filled out the form in the wrong pen color, you know, you can do that. And that's what he's talking. I mean, what they're purely just saying right now is that we don't care about international law. We don't care about Strasbourg. We're going to do whatever I want and, you know, whatever we want and, you know, up yours, is what they're saying. I mean, right?
Right. You say it all the time.
Yeah, I know. It just drives me crazy. And it's frustrating.
But it's not that they treat their, you know, protesters or, you know, pro-democracy activists in a more gentle way. I mean,
yeah,
it's like
that.
They're
yeah, true. True. Okay. We have a couple of interesting questions from listeners this time. It's not something we've really done before, but, you know, we were sent questions and I thought, hey, you know, let's just discuss. So, here they are. And I quote... And if anybody wants to send in a question, they're welcome to do that. And unless we get some gigantic avalanche, we'll try to answer them. You know, factoids or opinions or whatever you want, be as concise as you can. But, you know, we're going to quote, we will never use names, by the way, unless you tell us we can. Who on earth is Ivanishvili campaigning against? To my knowledge, no one from the national movement has declared intentions to run for the executive branch. Also, from what I've gathered, Ivanishvili seems to have the same platform as Saakashvili. I could be... very well mistaken, but I haven't really observed any actual platform differences. Additionally, does it not seem suspicious that there is some guy who's running for the presidency who legally, at this point in time, cannot serve as president, and prior to him, the only real challenger, who has a different platform, stepped aside so he could run? Who are they talking about? Who's the last person they're talking about?
The
Lasagna?
Platform?
Oh, sorry. I don't know. I don't know who stepped aside.
Yeah, that was my...
Or Burjanadze? I don't know.
Burjanadze?
But she did not step aside for it.
Well, and then I would say real challenger, quote unquote.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, who is Ivanishvili campaigning against? I don't know. I think he's campaigning for the status quo without Misha. That's what...
Yeah, I mean, this platform question is pretty important. And I have the same confusion about the platform. Because I think, you know, this government, to their credit... is, I think, very progressive in terms of religious, you know, minorities, you know, a lot of things like that. I think it's...
homosexuals,
you know,
I mean, any kind of minority. I mean,
right,
it's like a social
minority.
Libertarian approach.
Right, and it's and they really are that way. I mean, they took a very brave stance in legalizing, you know, Armenian Church, Catholic Church, Jehovah's Witnesses, whatever else. And so you know, I think they're very progressive in that way. They're somewhat status kind of, you know, I don't know what you'd call it, like... you know, Singaporean and the sort of development attitude of sort of strong state, you know, whatever. But, you know, I mean, I think in a lot of ways they are quite, you know, at least in their official platforms, you know, very, you know, they see themselves as modernizers, and they are. On the other hand, Bidzina, I mean, look, a lot of money to the Orthodox Church, a whole bunch of money. So that whole gold thing on top of the, you know, the Samepa, the new one.
The 200 priests to Paris.
Yeah, I mean, just lots of money to the Orthodox Church and to this Orthodox Church. I mean, I understand piety, but you know, I mean,
He's been doing that for a long time.
No, he's been doing that for a very long time. Yeah. I mean, but it's like,
but
why
the ruling party
that?
Gives 20 million lari a year minimum officially from the state budget to the church. I mean, they, you know, they probably don't enjoy doing it, but
right.
They're doing the same thing, just from their, you know, from government funds rather than their own pockets.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. The platform differences, I don't really see.
Pro-NATO, pro-West.
There's much more party discipline within the ruling party, you know, so that the Ivanishvili's people just say a lot of wacky stuff. I mean, about you know, gays, about...
Armenians.
I mean, all sorts of, you know, sort of, and quite often, I mean, a lot of sort of crazy and irresponsible stuff where you don't hear those comments really much at all from the ruling party.
You certainly have a lot of people who have broken off from the ruling party over the years.
Right. Well, and?
So, I mean, you have party differences, I think, in between. I mean, rather platform differences in between. I mean, people have just used it as kind of a way to... gain recognition and a certain amount of power, and then they kind of split off and attempt to... No?
I don't know. I mean, I think if you're talking about the ruling party, the national movement, and the ruling team, I think they're pretty clear in what they're for. I mean, I think that there's some, there's some hypocrisy. I mean, in saying, libertarian and we're not in favor of government control of this and that.
Now the competition is who increases the pension by 20 more lari. I mean, I think Ivanishvili has proposed a little bit more of a raise than the ruling party at the moment.
I was making a distinction about party discipline because you were saying that there's party discipline. So I was saying that people who are not apparently, along towing the party line, they're the ones that break off.
Right.
Or they're kicked out.
Yeah, they're kicked out or break off or whatever. And I guess theoretically they could say that. I mean, the real mystery in terms of platform is the Christian Democrats. I feel like Targamadze is kind of like, I don't know, we're supposed to be Christian Democrats, so we have to say bad things about, gay people, but I mean, why? Nobody really knows, and it's sort of half-hearted.
He's kind of the opportunist right-wing populist of the ruling party. I mean, you have that in a bunch of countries. Usually it's within, people's parties, for example. You always have a right-wing in, center conservative party that tries to cover, the crazy right-wingers and make sure that there's no space for another right-wing party to be further on the right. I mean, he's doing that for the ruling party, I guess.
Well, I remember making a graph in 2003 that had two axes. One was how close or far you were from Shevardnadze, and the other axis was how close to America you were, and with the other side being how close to Russia you were. Mm. And you could pretty much locate everybody within those four quadrants. I would say that the sort of America, Russia, with Europe in the middle, axis is still there and quite, important. And then it's just Misha. How hard opposition are you to Misha or not could one way be put there. And so I'm not sure whether the right-left axis really matters that much here. I still do think that the best thing written about this in terms of what is Georgia is Tom Duvall's thing, Georgian Choices, about, the three possible Georgias, old Georgia, EU Georgia, and Singapore Georgia.
I just wonder, we haven't really spoken about Russia. I wonder, could we say that there are some fairly large differences between the way that the national movement and Georgian Dream are looking at relations with Russia?
Officially not, right? I mean, Ivanishvili says, when I'm back, then in power, or when I'm in power, then, we can export goods to Russia. But, I mean, he is denying these allegations that he is, close to the Kremlin.
Well, no one in the world. I'm closer to the Kremlin than Misha. Putin doesn't want to hang me by my,
Well, not that you know.
Right. That's right. Actually, there are some comments, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think this government has made it. I mean, it is impossible for them to be more clear about their stance towards Russia. Whereas I think there is a lack of clarity about it, the other side's stance. Maybe that's for political reasons because some people, want to keep options open. Maybe it's just because they don't know. Not clear. The second question. What do we think about the parliament moving to Kutaisi?
I think it's not a good idea, because right now the parliament is a rubber stamp. If they're in Kutaisi, there's even less media coverage, less NGOs, less access to the parliament than there is right now. It's a new, shiny, transparent building, but it's further away from a lot of people than it is right now. Right now it's in the center of the city, it's in the center of the capital, it's easily accessible for everybody. I think if it's in Kutaisi, it's quite a long way to go there and to kind of participate in any debate, to watch what's going on there.
Well, what do you think? I mean, I if you're going to look at the two reasons why it's moving there, one is to probably develop Kutaisi economically, and the second is maybe some sort of general thoughts about decentralization or regional development, right? And I'm not really sure. Certainly the first is probably going to happen. You're going to have maybe 150 families move out there, some parliamentarians. There's going to be the airport that's already being developed, so lots of flights going in and out. Infrastructure will be improved
NGOs,
as well.
People,
media
people,
shops,
will
and things
there,
like that.
Yeah.
But
yes,
that's moving the parliament for that reason is kind of, couldn't they have moved something else? I don't know.
I mean, the supreme legislative body, what's supposedly the, you know, the sort of the focus of, yeah, of policy making in the country. I mean, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I do think it is good to, you know, to sort of put it in the middle of the country and, you know, whatever. But
it's also inefficient. I mean, yes, like, if the government, you know, if ministers are really held accountable by parliament, they will have to show up a lot of the times for the plenary sessions and ask questions and
answer
questions.
Some of them don't show up in Tbilisi.
Right, but now they have to...
Maybe they're in Kutaisi, you know, already.
maybe they're gambling in Kaltuvo, yeah. Okay, well, anyway, yes, we'll see how that goes, whether that moves over the heft towards the west. All right, so about WTO monitors, any new information there?
Yeah, so I had an interesting conversation. You know, we had been talking about how this was going to happen, when it was going to happen, and I found out a bit more detail that kind of added some clarity for me. I had always wondered, why are they not looking at sea transport, right? And what it is actually is that this agreement is not so much about focusing on what is going into the occupied territories. It's what's going all the way through. So the monitors will be reporting on three routes. Two of them are going through the occupied territories, one going through Kazbegi, or Larsi, right? And then they're going to be reporting on items that are coming all the from Russia and entering into Georgia. So it's not...
Government-controlled Georgia.
Yes, sorry. Yes, the territory controlled by Georgia.
Okay, so it's Larsi, Roki, and whatever the one on the far side is, yeah, like on the Abkhazia.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So it's not, you know, so much about looking. Theoretically, they'll have the information about what's going in.
Right.
But that's not what's going to be reported.
You mean coming into Georgia?
What's going into Abkhazia and South Ossetia. Right. They'll have that information, but they're not reporting on that information. They should be reporting on the information about those items that are coming from Russian-controlled territory, meaning above,
right,
you know, the border that's internationally recognized, into Georgian-controlled territory.
Huh, interesting. Okay, this afternoon, a U.S. passport-holding American shareholder of Global TV, the kind of cable company that shows TV9 and is majority owned by Ivanishvili's brother, was detained at the Tbilisi airport when he tried to leave the country, Interpress news reports. People at TV9 are saying that he was put in handcuffs and questioned about some money laundering allegations.
Yeah, so we don't really know much about what's going on there, but we know that there has been a lot of pressure on Global TV over the past week or so or more. There are a bunch of court cases against them. One is Imedi and Rustavi 2 are suing them because the two channels refused their permission for Global TV to retransmit their signal. So Global TV clients cannot watch it. And Global TV operates in two different ways. So in eastern Georgia and Tbilisi and Kakheti, they broadcast through a microwave system, basically like a cell phone network, and you can watch their signal like you're subscribing to a cable company. In western Georgia, they don't have that infrastructure. So in western Georgia, they have handed out satellite dishes. And that's a dispute of a court case because the government says they basically gave them away as gifts, more or less. And that's an attempted bribing of voters.
And that's part of the 150...
That's part of the 150 lari. Million lari fine. But then there's a kind of an absurd question about the people who have these satellite dishes. They point them towards a Turkish satellite. And by pointing them up to a satellite, they can watch Rustavi 2 and Imedi, which are broadcasting through the satellite in a non-encrypted way.
Right.
So anybody who has kind of a satellite dish can watch these channels for free. And now there's a court dispute whether Global TV is actually retransmitting the signal illegally, although everybody can basically... It's like me being accused of retransmitting Imedi because I hand you a piece of cord that you plug into your TV antenna, and then you can watch Imedi.
Oh, dear.
But basically, they provided people with the equipment that allows them to receive a freely available signal from a satellite. And now they're accused of, you know, you're still retransmitting that signal. And they're saying, well, we're not. You know, we're just giving some people, you know, a satellite dish or a radio like to receive a signal.
So now intellectual property rights, right? So anybody who downloads material, like a material that's illegal, then now the computer company can be held accountable.
I would just like to say that the Tepelpod.com is Creative Commons licensed, so chop us up, do a remix, do whatever, you rebroadcast, you know, send us over Hot Bird, whatever you want. An umbrella coalition of NGOs, It Affects You, called on Parliament to force cable operators to show all television stations with news programs. This is the so-called must-carry law, with quite important, especially the U.S. government has been pushing for it, and hopefully Europe will too. This would increase the public's access to information ahead of the elections. The NGOs said that charges and sanctions applied by the Chamber of Control, prosecutor's office and courts to representatives and supporters of political parties are often based on one-sided and insufficiently substantiated facts or assumptions, end quote. This Affects You to also called on President Saakashvili, quote, to immediately carry out adequate measures to ensure free, fair pre-election and media environment, end quote, saying that, quote, otherwise the legitimacy of the upcoming parliamentary elections may be questioned. End quote.
And so one of the major concerns here is, of course, you know, all the fines against Ivanishvili. Well, some of the, you know, violations of the ruling party or ruling party representatives are investigated and punished, but we're talking about two different scales here.
Amazingly different scales.
And the other concern is, of course, access to different sources of information for people, because 9 out of 10 Georgians get their political information mostly from television, and only about, I would say, 30 to 40% of the population at this moment has access to TV channels that are other than the national government affiliated channels.
If you go to crrc.ge/ODA, you can get exact information about media usage.
That's right, CRRC Tbilisi, just Google it and you'll find the stuff. Lots of factoids in there. Frustratingly, MP Paliko Kubalashvili said it would be unlawful if cable companies were obligated to include any channel in their packet because that goes against market rules and deters the development of business. That's just stupid. I mean, you know, really. Like, so the must carry, that term is being used. It's all over Facebook, so everybody must understand what must carry means, which just means if you've got news broadcasts and there's a channel that, you know, you have to carry that within the package. Then the other one is
must offer, which
must
means
offer, which
that,
is what?
For example, if you are like Imedia Rustavitu, you have a national broadcast license, you have to allow any cable company or satellite company to retransmit your signal so that everybody can watch your channel. And that's because, you know, Imedia and Rustavitu, for example, they have 60% of the Georgian audience. So they have a lot of market power in their hands. And they, for example, have, as we just discussed, banned or kind of had a, you know, decision that that Global TV must not show their signal or must not broadcast their signal. So by, you know, denying some operator to show them, they could basically weaken that operator. Fewer people would pay for, you know, a cable package if they cannot show or see certain TV stations on that package.
So even though they'll do it for free, they're saying, no, we don't want you to. So it's must carry, must offer.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it's really both. It's not just must carry, it's must carry, must offer. All right. From a listener in Kosovo, it was reported in the Albanian language press that a Georgian model construction code was introduced, super liberal libertarian, therefore make it easier for Kosovars to do sort of sketchy deals and build cheaply and dangerously. Quite critical commentary there, at least according to the Google Translate version of the Albanian press.
Of the email we received from our listener in English that we translated to Albanian.
Exactly. But shout out to the Kosovars.
But there's also apparently, so a former minister of finance is doing consulting down there.
That's right, Lexo Alexashvili. So,
exporting Georgian reforms that are apparently not always well received.
Well, at least by whoever wrote that article.
Yes,
who knows?
Yes.
But there was also something bizarre about how there was some trip that was included for people who had been associated with it, that they got this free trip to Turkey or something.
That part of the article was like, okay, so as you may remember, last week a worker died on a construction site in Parliament. Misha called for a criminal investigation and demanded that the person who is in charge of safety measures be held responsible. Police detained this person. Call me crazy. I bet he's going to spend time in jail, since the president said he's going to spend time in jail.
Right. But what I'm wondering about is, so if a company in Georgia is accused of not paying taxes, right, then the CEO is very quickly liable and can go to jail for tax evasion and fraud.
Right.
Why, if a company violates, you know, safety measures, why is then not the CEO or owner liable for that? You know, could it be because the company, you know, who is affected by that is owned by a public official?
No,
we don't. I mean, we don't know which company it was.
I mean, at least those big cranes all said Magdi style on them that were building.
Right, and as we have discussed, this company is owned by Irakli Chikovani, the head of the Communications Commission, and Gheorghe Gigichidze, the co-owner and director of Rustavi 2. And, you know, maybe...
But I also think it's pretty interesting because last week, I mean, there was a little bit of confusion. Well, we rather didn't have our sources, you know, verified yet. But afterwards, I saw an article where Saakashvili was quoted in English, so there's translation issues perhaps, saying that he was personally there investigating and he had personally determined that there had been, you know, safety violations. And so he personally had made a decision that there should be a criminal investigation. I just think it's, you know, very interesting if you look at the way that the legal system is functioning here.
That the president basically
orders
a criminal investigation into something.
Right.
I don't know.
Or not.
Encourages.
Right. I mean, well, we'll see. Well, no, or, you know, there are certain cases where there could be criminal investigations. You know, I mean, I don't remember a, you know, criminal investigation in certain cases in Tribuli, for example.
Yeah. Or all the death cases. I mean,
on Freedom Square, I heard that there were three people that were killed during the construction of whatever that building is on Les Elysees.
That is built without the necessary sign that says who is building what there and with what permit. I mean, that is one thing that really bothers me in Tbilisi. All these construction projects, they don't say, this is the permit that we have, this is the company that is building it, this is the owner. All that is required, and all that we haven't seen in the recent months in most construction sites in D.C.
BBC had a story about Parliament in Georgia, how this glassy building is supposed to symbolize transparency and democracy, but also how it's expensive and it'll be complicated for the MPs to move there and all that. The hardest working NGO in Georgia, Transparency International Georgia, released a report about the problems of regional media, including cases of harassment, intimidation, beating of journalists, and how the government has not done much to investigate these cases or hold perpetrators accountable. It's on their website. Go check it out.
But also, you know, after releasing this report, Ivanishvili, who now has an English language Twitter account, tweeted about this report, or his communications person, whoever is involved in that. But
Who is that? We want to know who's tweeting for Bidzina. In English. So just, you know, someone tell us.
But,
that.
I mean, after that tweet, I realized, you know, they're doing a lot of English tweeting now. And the government does, too. And that's only for an international audience. So you can really see how Georgia...
There are a lot of Georgians. I mean, a lot of... non-politically related Georgians that do most of their tweeting in English
as
well.
But I'm also hearing stories about, you know, how high-level representatives of the ruling party are really getting interested in all these young, cool Georgians who are tweeting in English. And, you know, so there's really getting more of a competition over the heavy users of Twitter to kind of use them for, you know, campaigning purposes, maybe.
So Interesting. So CNN has a series on Georgia on its program Eye On for about a week. They've been talking about Laziga, Batumi, the parliament in Kutaisi, new drones and other stuff, great publicity. The program will last until the 24th of June.
And, I mean, it's very positive coverage and a little bit superficial, as you would expect from CNN. But the whole thing is surrounded by Invest in Georgia ads. But CNN doesn't say this is, you know, kind of... semi-sponsored segment or something.
I remember when they were here some time back. I talked to a producer. I can't remember.
A year ago or something.
Yeah, a long time ago. And they were pretty frank that the government paid for this. I mean, they told me that. And then I said that at some point, and somebody yelled at me and said, no, we didn't. But it's kind of like...
It's kind of obvious that they just didn't show up because some editor said, let's do 20 segments on Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. So I think somebody needs to talk to CNN about that. And by the way, I mean, Al Jazeera is so much better. Al Jazeera English is just by far the best TV coverage news that I of Georgia that I have seen.
Of many things.
Yeah, and practically, and everything else too.
At BBC as well.
Yeah.
BBC Radio.
Right, so let's have like, you know, must carry, must offer in America for Al Jazeera since, you know, as our American listeners know, you don't seem to be able to watch it very easily there. Now, Al Jazeera, Arabic, little nutty, let's be real. But Al Jazeera English is great. Secretary General, oh, by the way, I just talked to some people in the Marriott lobby that were, whatever it is, Emirates Airlines or something like that. They said that there's twice a day, flights twice a day to Doha. Surely that couldn't be. I don't know. There
are
a lot of flights to Doha. So anybody's interested in going, lots and lots of flights to Doha.
What are you
going to
do in Doha? Fly somewhere
fly somewhere else. Yeah, but I don't know. It's like you want to go. It's sort of like a, I don't know. Can you go tour Al Jazeera or something? Or I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of malls. It's like Dubai. Right.
I don't think we reported on it last week, but Tbilisi and Doha are twin cities now.
Twin cities. That's right. Twin. We're twin. That from a dedicated listener. Shout out. Secretary General, Special Representative for the Caucasus of Central Asia, James Apathurai, who I always want to call Apsiuri, and also the chairperson of the OSCE, Irish Foreign Minister Eamon Gilmore, man of the people for the people, old union man, were visiting Georgia, talked about the importance of free and fair elections.
Well, let's be frank, the OSCE doesn't really matter that much ever since Kazakhstan was, like, you know,
right.
The
and
chair.
Actually, Ireland and Georgia, I don't know. But there will be an Irish-Georgian film festival.
And the Irish EU presidency, so
Ireland's big. Irish culturally, I think, has a lot in common with Georgia, you know, love of poetry and other things that they love, you know.
Church.
Yeah, Gilmore was also in Armenia and Azerbaijan, talked about Karabakh, which is a big mess. By the way, Karabakh, the shooting in Karabakh, of which there's been a lot, that has largely happened on the north side of Karabakh, close to the Georgian border, where Georgia, Armenia, and Azerbaijan meet. Now, it doesn't mean for those, you know, teach and learn, you know, parents that are listening, that doesn't mean it's going to spread directly, you know, but, you know, it is, you know... In the, you know, the general area just south of the border.
Has the Azeri-Georgian border conflict over David Gerechi been resolved yet? I mean,
no.
I've heard there's
a sort of standoff there. I don't know. I don't know. It has not been resolved, but I don't think that anybody's shooting at each other.
Yeah.
U.S. Ambassador John Bass spoke about Georgia-Iranian relations, among other things, at the Atlantic Council in D.C. It's quite interesting. Have a listen. Civil.ge reports that the City Council of Kutaisi released two activists of Georgian Dream on 3,000 lari bail the day before the same court sent three other activists to pretrial detention. All five face voter bribery charges in the Dream Flyer vote buying case.
So that's because they apparently or allegedly handed out flyers that said, you know, write your Georgian Dream here. And then they allegedly told people, you know, it can be a fridge that you will get around the elections.
So right. There were three, though, from last week that we reported on, and only two have been released, or these are different people?
I don't know if these are the same order.
They also heard that the Georgian Dream said they expelled these people from their party.
TI Georgia blogged a couple of months ago about the UNM member of the Rustavi municipality, Velukashvili, buying sheep and wine for some of the people around there. Chamber Control released a statement saying that he was not involved in it. Instead, they fined the deputy chairman of the Rustavi City Council, Kaja Baratashvili, almost 8,000 lari. Parliament passed with first reading amendments to the election code about the Bidzina-related constitutional changes, also the fact that the voter list can be verified even on the day of elections. Interesting. See what that means.
Deadline is December 31st, actually, 2012, which I thought was quite interesting.
Deadline for what?
For this commission. This commission's life is supposed to exist until December 31st, 2012.
Huh. Democracy Freedom Watch reports that Georgia may restrict Russian observers to monitor parliamentary elections. If the parliament passes a new proposal, any country that wants to send observers must first express its support for Georgia's sovereignty.
Yeah, and they also need to say something about democracy and respect for human rights in their mission statement, which is going to make it a bit more difficult for many NGOs to be qualified as, you know, observers. So some people might need to change their, some of the fake observer missions might need to change their mission statement.
Are we making a distinction between sovereignty and territorial integrity?
I think it's a territorial integrity that needs to be recognized.
Interesting. Okay. Frankly, I don't have a problem with this. I mean, the Russian observers, the OSCE as an international observation entity was gutted as soon as Russia started paying attention to it. And I've dealt with enough Russian election observers over the years to just say that they don't help matters. You know, so if they don't want to sign the thing, if that's a way for Georgia to keep them out, then great. Yellow minibuses are installing screens for advertising. Radio Free Europe reports that this might lead to swamping riders with political advertisements and equal time requirements. Saakashvili offers a special scholarship for students from the regions covering their living expenses in the capital. One more handout to the youth voters. First Deputy Chief Prosecutor of Georgia, Dato Sakhvaralidze, resigned and said that he plans to go into politics. He may run as a candidate from Kurtsanisi district.
And he's quite interesting. So as a deputy prosecutor, he basically runs the, you know, prosecution. So, he has, there have been signs that, you know, his position was built for a few months now. So he has a show on Rustavi 2 that is about basically court cases, real court cases, and he's kind of the star of that show. I haven't really seen it, but people talk about it. And in the past couple of months, there was also a bunch of YouTube videos that showed up, you know, uploaded by somebody anonymous,
right,
that are basically bugs or hidden cameras in prison cells that show conversations of thieves in law that sit in Georgian prisons.
Hmm.
And these are quite humiliating for these, you know, formerly these guys were running the country in the 90s. They were very respected individuals. And now you see them, you know, in their sweatpants kind of getting into fist fights with their, you know, fellow thieves in law. And that's like a big thing on YouTube. There's like 250,000 views of one video. And there's some speculation that he might be the guy who kind of, you know, uploaded these videos, because he's definitely one person who has access to all this material.
Indeed. Misha opened another house of justice, this time in Gurjani. Ivanishvili is not the founder of CAR2 International Charity Foundation. It's someone from Benin.
It's an offshore entity,
like everything else in Georgia. But the fund has still had to submit information on the financial activities, on its financial activities, to Chamber of Control. NetGazeti.ge reports that management service, a company which was renting offices for Georgian Dream, is facing bankruptcy after getting fines totaling 2.3 million lari.
And we have on the TI Georgia website, there's a blog that kind of describes the court hearing about that case. And it's quite interesting because it really shows that the court did not do a very good job, I would say, in being really fair in its hearing and giving the accused party enough time to prepare and all that. So
Kakheti Information Center released a statement saying that Georgian Dream members prevented them from taking coalition leaders' comments and specifically Maestro and TV9. A spokesperson for Bidzina apologized, says it won't happen again. They also said that Maestro TV fired its local correspondent in Kutaisi, who published an article in Ali about how Ivanishvili's people were buying votes in Western Georgia.
And this is really the problem, that we have largely partisan media in Georgia now. I mean, there's very few, you know, independent outlets that, you know, can be completely independent from Ivanishvili and from the government. I mean, so many people get cash from one or the other side.
Yeah.
And the Ninth Channel and the new news agency they have, Info9, they hired really a lot of talent. You know, they pay five times the salaries than the local media outlets can pay their people. And it has really weakened the independent media that we have in Georgia.
Member of Parliament Gyorgy Kandalaki from the United National Movement and MP Gyorgy Tsagadashvili from the opposition faction Unity for Justice had an argument on Maestro. Kandalaki said that the Georgian Dream were bringing in fake observers. Tsagadashvili said, "How dare you say that an organization registered in Florida could possibly have fake observers.
Oh, or sketchy friends that we have discussed before on this show.
Yeah, perhaps.
They
I don't know.
Should have picked a different place than Florida.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know. But it's, yeah, I don't know.
I tried to look up the Florida registration. I couldn't.
Oh, yeah. It goes nowhere. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of sketchiness, including the foreigners showing up for these elections. Especially the foreigners showing up for the elections. Yeah, the retired Italian MPs were, in my experience, always the worst around Europe, you know. Civil.ge reports that Foreign Minister of Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Georgia met on the 8th of June in Trabzon and pledged to further boost already existing successful cooperation. Georgian government held an investment forum in Seoul. TI Georgia found out that Black Sea Product undertook an investment of $750 million in soup support construction, which had to be completed by 2012, employing 2,500 local residents. But it has not fulfilled any of that. Tbilisi Transport Company, including the insurance company TAO, T-A-O, was put on a blacklist saying that they did not provide sufficient insurance service to them, thus banning them from participating in state tenders for a year. TAO is filing a suit saying that's not true. Aegean Airlines of Greece had its first Athens-Tbilisi-Athens flights, flying regularly twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays. Prices start at €275 round trip. Kommersant.ge reports that Pegasus will start flying Istanbul-Batumi as well. TV reports that there's been unprecedented heat in Georgia compared to the last 50 years. It will reach 38 degrees Celsius, but allegedly rain in Tbilisi soon.
Big news.
Big news. Democracy rains, always big news. Democracy and Freedom Rocks reports what condition the Roma community in live in Tbilisi. They went to a place out in Samgori, I think. How it's marginalized, and a lot of them don't have papers. Interesting that they were covered, since that group is not often covered. So, Kolga will be showing The King's Speech tomorrow night, Friday at 8 p.m. Cachet, 2005, French with English subtitles.
Also very good.
I have not seen that. Wednesday, the 20th of June at 8 p.m., Blue Valentine, U.S. 2010. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango, X-Ray, Tango, Bravo, Uniform, Kilo. Our email is tbilpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum on our website, tbilpod.com, tblpod.com. See you there. Keep the ideas and stories coming. And now, Desmond Dekker from 1968 with Israelites.
Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed. Oh, me Israelites, get up in the morning, slaving for bread.